Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So today the Conservative campaign is trying to get itself back on track after yesterday turned out to be possibly the worst day for them so far. Started off with Boris Johnson refusing to look at a picture of a four-year-old boy lying on the floor of an NHS hospital when questioned by an ITV journalist. Katie, what happened then?
Well, Boris Johnson refused to look at it when he was presented the picture by Joe Pike from ITV, and then when the journalist kept putting the phone in front of him, Boris Johnson responded by taking the phone and putting it in his pocket. He then appeared to have second thoughts about this.
Which is Theresa May levels of awkwardness, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if she would take the phone. I think where people were drawing some Theresa May comparisons quite a lot yesterday, actually, was because it seemed a fairly robotic response. So instead of, I suppose, showing empathy or not having an emotive response, Boris Johnson kept parroting his lines, you know, on the NHS, on funding the NHS, almost a bit like a broken record while putting his phone away. He seemed to have second thoughts on the phone and got it back out. But quite quickly, this spiraled. You had the clip, to use a friend of mine, I suppose, going viral online. And it went from there. They then sent Matt Hancock in to try and calm the situation down, so to a hospital in Leeds to give an interview. And the health secretary did that. But at that point, things got fairly nasty. There were, in terms of tensions between the two parties, there were Labour activists or Labour supporters outside who were verbally very critical to abusive vet to Matt Hancock. And then reports started to circulate that his aide had been punched. Then, and that was put out by several journalists on Twitter, then video emerged showing that he wasn't actually punched. What had happened was walked into the arm.
Smash me there.
I'm not going to do it to you. And it wouldn't be a punch, just to be clear. That would be an accident. Yeah, he'd walked into the arm of someone who was
gesticulating.
He was gesticulating about how angry they were about the Tory government. So that clearly annoyed lots on the Labour side, because you definitely had a story online for about half an hour, potentially, where they're suggesting a Labour activist had assaulted someone. So I think the bigger picture here is the fact that yesterday was all about the NHS and it cast the Tories in a negative light. And we know that the view in Number 10 and those figures who have moved Number 10 to CCHQ from this campaign are very focused in terms of the output on the news at 6 and the news at 10 and the news bulletins. And the volcano in New Zealand was the number one story, but ultimately the second story on those bulletins was all about the NHS, all about this four-year-old boy and the Prime Minister refusing to look at a photo of him. So I think it was a bad day for the Tories. And I think the question is, you've got several papers today who have found details of other, you know, there's the Mirror have a picture of a baby who was left waiting. There are other stories that are coming out. So is this going to be the theme of the final days of this campaign? Or are the Tories going to manage to either, I suppose, change the topic or change the narrative on the issue of the NHS? Because they need to do something. Because what they wanted to spend the final few days, as we discussed on the podcast yesterday, doing was doubling down their key messages. And instead, it's the NHS, which is the top story. And that's exactly what Labour want and exactly what the Tories don't.
James, Linton Crosby used to say that the Tories should just not talk about the NHS at all. In this campaign, they've just turned that on its head, whether it's extra funding or extra nurses, just appear more compassionate and really just tackle that NHS point that voters want to hear about. But yesterday seems to have undone a lot of that effort.
I think the NHS is simply too big an issue in the country to not talk about. I think, you know, the Tory attempt to constantly change the conversation away from it, I think it would really struggle right now. And I think it would particularly struggle because Boris Johnson led the Vote Leave campaign, which made such a big deal of leaving the EU so that you could spend more money on the NHS. And so I don't mean that was a viable strategy for the Tories in this election. I think yesterday is the risk of a winter election. When is the NHS under most pressure? And when is it particularly under most pressure on children's services? Is winter. And yesterday was the risk of that. You know, this is, you know, the two big risks of a winter election were kind of, you know, weather events like flooding and NHS story like this, because, you know, the pressure's on the health service. And, you know, there hasn't been in this country yet a kind of big flu epidemic or anything like that. But, you know, obviously these pictures are, as you say, this is Katie was saying, sorry, this is not how the Tories want to close out the last 72 hours of the election, or 48 hours as it is now, because they want the message to be about ending the gridlock, getting Brexit done, moving on. Labour want it to be about the NHS. So I think the kind of challenge for them is whether they can get back onto their desired closing messages today. And I think you were saying, you know, was this the worst ever campaign for them? I think, you know, it wasn't as bad a day as the day when you had the Jacob Rees-Mogg Grenfell comments and Alan Cairns resigning. But at the start of the campaign, the Tories did have a kind of several wobbly days, one after the other, before they kind of got a grip on it. At the risk of stating the bleeding obvious, at this point, they cannot afford for this to go on. Mm. They need to kind of get back onto their own messages now.
Yep, and Katie, it does seem like they might have things working out for them now. This morning, the Guido Fawkes website released an 11-minute conversation, a recording of a conversation with the Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, who's been out to battle for Labour this morning, but where he's saying the sort of stuff you might hear from Tory activists instead of a member of the Labour front bench. Here's what he had to say.
But I don't think we're going to get there. I just can't see it. I mean, I've been out in places like Mansfield and Ashfield, and it's dire for the Labour Party up there in these traditional areas. Well, I mean, anyone in the sort of middle, outside of the sort of city seats, you know, if you're in sort of small town Midlands and North, it's abysmal out there. They don't like Johnson, but they can't stand Corbyn, and they think Labour's blocked Brexit.
Yeah.
I don't think they're long-term sort of gains for the Tory party, but I can well see them going Tory in this election, and if Labour ever got its act together, they presumably would fall back. You know, so you know what I mean? But on the other end of the sketch, you know, I think kind of middle class graduates, sort of Remainy people, Labour's probably doing well and sort of Lib Dems are probably doing well, but not in big enough numbers to deny the Tories a majority, is what I think. In the security stuff, yeah, I mean, I've worked in Number 10. I think the machine will pretty quickly move to safeguard security things. You know, I mean the civil service machine.
I mean, Katie, what are the political ramifications of this?
So the recording's obviously uncomfortable listening for anyone who in the Labour Party, in the sense that you have the Health Secretary being very frank in his assessment of Jeremy Corbyn as someone who is unpopular on the doorstep, particularly in these northern Labour-held seats, which they're worried about losing to the Tories. And I think having a shadow cabinet member say in an audio recording that they think Number 10 and various forces within government would have to get involved to restrain your leader if they were to make it to the place of, you know, high office of prime minister is clearly quite damning. It's what you'd normally hear from conservatives about Jeremy Corbyn when they talk about security risks. In terms of what this means for the election race, well, clearly the conservatives want to move the topic away from the NHS stories. I think that this has the potential to help them do that for a couple of reasons. First off, it's attention grabbing, and I think this is going to be a story that's going to run as the day goes on. And secondly, just for a very simple reason, ultimately, Labour are trying to attack the Tories on the NHS today, and they've been sending up Jonathan Ashworth to do a media round to try and land those points. Now, whenever he appears on television or radio, he is going to be asked about his comments criticising and expressing doubt in the suitability of his party leader to be Prime Minister. And that means they're either going to have to send someone else who isn't the Health Secretary to talk, who may still be asked about it, or they're going to have to accept that the message is going to not be solely on, I suppose, Tory issues on the NHS.
Yeah, I think from the Tory point of view, you know, there is no member of a shadow cabinet they would rather have caught out in this conversation than the shadow health secretary, because, as Katie says, you know, it makes it much harder. You know, either Labour have to bench Jonathan Ashworth, and I think we saw with Barry Gardiner on Newsnight that the NHS attack is less effective when someone who isn't doing that job, isn't doing that brief, tries to prosecute it, or they're going to have to accept these questions. Now, I think from the point of view, I think his analysis of a horse race and Corbyn's unpopularity
You know, I don't think that is that surprising. I don't think that is that damaging to Labour. I think it is much more with stuff about national security and this idea that kind of somehow the government machine would have to, the kind of implication is the government machine would have to somehow restrict Jeremy Corbyn's access to his stuff. This is quite extraordinary. You know, this is someone who is campaigning to make Jeremy Corbyn prime minister, saying that there are certain things that the government machine would have to do to protect. I mean, this is absolutely extraordinary. In a way, the problem with the Tories is that because Westminster loves a horse race story, but the horse race analysis of, you know, why Labour might hold middle-class Guardian reading Canterbury but lose some of those northern seats such as Bolsover, you know, will distract from that point. And now, I think in a way, we now wait to see how Labour handle this. You know, I think Jonathan Ashworth is meant to be doing a big hour-long interview on LBC with Ian Dale this evening. I would be surprised if they decided to continue with that. Jonathan Ashworth has said that this makes him look like a right plonker. I mean, the danger for Labour is if the Tories can get a line going. But if this is what even his shadow cabinet think about him, what should you think about Jeremy Corbyn? I think the final point is, you know, I was talking to a Tory cabinet the other day about what they wanted the closing issue of the election to be. And we all know that the Tories' closing message is get Brexit done. This cabinet minister was saying to me, look, the only thing better for us than Brexit is Corbyn, because Corbyn appeals to both iffy bits of the Tory coalition. To Tory Remainers, it is fear of Corbyn that basically means that they are sticking with the Tories in this election. And Labour leavers are not fond of Jeremy Corbyn either. I mean, I think indeed one of the things you keep hearing from Labour MPs, Labour activists, is it's not solely Brexit that is the issue in lots of these seats. It's the interaction of Brexit and Corbyn himself.
And also, James, on the front page of The Telegraph today, we have a leaked memo from CCHQ really stressing how close this election is. But sometimes it almost reads as if it was a memo from a second referendum campaign. What are the similarities there?
Well, both sides want to suggest this election is really close because both sides want to get their people to turn out. And I think this is the challenge. The Tories want to try. The Tories' big worry, I think, if you know, obviously yesterday was not a good day for them. I think the obvious potential problem for them today is this new MRP poll coming out at 10 p.m. tonight. If that shows a fairly comfortable Tory majority, what they worry about is that leads to Tory voters, you know, not being as motivated to turn out, or Tory Remainers thinking, oh, I can give them a little kick by voting Liberal Democrat and there's no danger that Jeremy Corbyn will end up as Prime Minister. And so they want to emphasise it's close for that reason. And also the other worry they would have, is that they would worry about those voters Katie was talking about who previously have voted Labour, who are going to vote Tory this time round. They see a comfortable Tory majority and think, oh, maybe I don't have to do it this time round. Maybe Brexit's going to get done anyway. Maybe I can vote for my local MP who I like. You know, all those kind of factors. So that's the Tory worry about it. On the Remain side, they want to basically ensure that their voters don't give up hope, that they still turn out, and they are very keen to encourage tactical voting. Now, tactical voting is a difficult thing to encourage. I think if you look back to the prime example of it in recent British political history was the 1997 election. There it was much easier to get tactical voting going because Labour and the Lib Dems had spent that from Tony Blair's election as Labour leader in 94, you know, they've been playing footsie with each other to an extent. You know, remember that Blair thought there might well have to be a coalition after the election. So they seemed very politically close. In this campaign, Labour and the Lib Dems have been going at each other. You know, Joe Swinson says Jeremy Corbyn is unfit to be Prime Minister. Jeremy Corbyn never misses an opportunity to attack the Lib Dems for the coalition and austerity and all that. And so I think trying to get tactical voting going now is harder. But if you don't want Brexit to get done, your last best hope is mass Remainer tactical voting, because that's what could deny the Tories a majority.
Katie, in terms of coalition talks, so far we've not really considered the DUP, but I mean, as we get closer to the deadline, what do you think the DUP could consider doing if they did end up in a kingmaker position once again? You know, John McDonnell yesterday in his speech left open the door for a coalition with the DUP, saying that they actually agreed on some things like higher wages. I forget the other areas of agreement. But yeah, do you think the DUP could lean either side in this coalition making?
I mean, I think the DUP working with Labour would depend very much on who the leader of the Labour Party is. I think that if you look at Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell and their previous interactions, when it comes to Irish politics, I don't think that's something that most in the DUP could ever countenance. And I think Nigel Dodds has been pretty clear on his opposition to those figures, you know, along with other DUP MPs throughout the Commons. If you have a different Labour leader, I think things could start to look different. But again, it would have to be from probably not that wing of the party. And then obviously in terms of the Conservatives, the DUP have suggested they wouldn't. But I also think the Conservatives wouldn't really want to be propped up by the DUP because it means they have to row back on their Brexit deal. Mm. And that's front and centre of their entire campaign. And if the Tories have to try and piece together a government propped up by the DUP, it's not a very stable government. You could be heading to an election again quite soon. And I think the idea of the Tories going to an election where they've dumped the Brexit deal, they spent the whole of the last election telling you they were going to pass so they could stay in power for a couple of months, I don't think it's something they'll go for.
But that's a tough decision, isn't it? I mean, if you were a DUP handspan away from a majority, I mean, if you were the Tories, would you really just say no, we'll let Corbyn get into number 10 instead?
I think having, as Katie said, if you campaigned on your Brexit deal being oven ready, to suddenly junk it for a bunch of DUP votes. Also, I think...
Yeah, it wasn't so good after all.
But also, you know, you would have difficulties on your own benches if you turned around and suddenly said, right, now we're going for no deal. And I thought there was a kind of interesting little straw in the wind, which was, I thought, Nigel Dodds' interview with the Sunday Telegraph, when he said, look, if the UK was aiming for tariff-free trade with the rest of the EU, that would lessen some of our concerns about the deal. It was mildly interesting because the UK is aiming for tariff-free trade with the EU. You know, whether it can get it is another question, but that is definitely the explicit aim of government policy right now. I don't mean to depress you both. I still think in the event of a hung, that the most likely hung parliament is a hung parliament the Tories just short. You know, if you believe all these polling models, the data praxis one for the Sunday Times had the Tories at 310 as the kind of floor. They couldn't go below that. And I think if the Tories get close, but just not there, I think we could well be heading for another election in, say, February. Because I find it very hard to see how you could put together a governing arrangement on the other side of the aisle, because if Labour have denied the Tories a majority, I don't think Jeremy Corbyn would be inclined to step down. Jo Swinson has been very vehement that she would never put Jeremy Corbyn into number 10. But you can't imagine the DUP, and I probably won't have 10 MPs after the election, but its group of MPs saying, OK, let's put Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell in number 10, given, as Katie says, their views are on United Ireland. So I think you could well end up in a situation where nothing can happen in the next parliament, and they can't even agree on a second referendum. So they have no choice but to say, OK, let's all go again in February.
Yeah, though I have just looked at my phone, and we've been talking about a Friday 13th election in the sense that that's when we get the results. And if we head in February, you could do potentially Friday the 14th of February.
Oh, Valentine's Day.
Which is obviously just be like so lovely for everyone.
Definitely will be very lovely to have a February election. Thanks, Katie and James. And tomorrow we'll be joined back again by YouGov's Marcus Roberts to talk about his MRP poll tonight. Thanks for listening, and join us again then.